8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio. I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest this morning is Dr. Chuck Ellis, and his boat is in town. It's been here for about a year. It's called the Boreas. How do you say your boat's name?
Boreas.
Boreas. All right. Kind of butchered that on the intro. But, well, thank you for coming on the program and talking about your sailing adventures on the air this morning.
You're welcome.
Well, what brings you, first of all, to Sand Point?
Well, I passed through here last summer on my way out into the Bering Sea and had to leave the boat here for a week. And I was impressed with the town and especially with the harbor. So when I came back out of the Bering Sea last fall and needed to leave my boat somewhere, I decided to leave it here.
Now, you've sailed extensively around the state of Alaska, and you bought the boat that you have here in 1993. Where have you sailed? Just name a few places.
Well, in the Boreas, I've been in Lituya Bay. The high points to me, anyway, Lituya Bay is probably the top. I circumnavigated the Queen Charlotte Islands. I'm interested in archaeology, so I spent a lot of time looking at the old the Haida villages there. And I've been up and down just about every passage in Southeast, which is one reason I decided to take off and come up here.
What are the winds and tides like in Alaska?
Oh, man, the winds and tides here are unbelievable compared to the rest of the world. Except for maybe Funter Bay over Nova Scotia, the tides here are phenomenal. I was used to sailing in the tropics where the tides are a couple of inches. Mm. And when I first got my boat in 93, the first thing I did is run aground at high tide on a reef, and it was a 20-foot tide. So there my boat sat up on a hill.
Did you do any damage to the boat?
No, fortunately I didn't. The tide went out slowly, so once I got hard aground, I got out and kind of built a little cradle around it. But I have a picture of it, and it's sitting on top of a little hill, and there's no water anywhere in the picture.
Hmm.
That's how far the tide went out.
Now, you've also sailed to Foulds Pass and to Dutch Harbor and to St. Paul. In fact, you were stranded for a little bit in St. Paul when you got some repairs done to your boat, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
For a brief period of time. And you said that as you sailed out in the Bering Sea, the fishermen would contact you all the time saying, you know, you should get out of the Bering Sea before winter sets in. What was that like? I mean, to have all these people constantly contacting you all the time.
Well, actually, I mean, it gives you a good feeling when you're way out in the middle of nowhere and you realize that people are looking out for you. At first, they would just, early in August, they would contact me simply because they'd never seen a sailboat out there, and evidently they thought that I was in trouble because they constantly radio me and ask me if I was having any problems. And some of them would actually be somewhat disbelieving when I'd reassure them that I was okay.
Yeah, the boat may be okay, but the sailor at the helm, well, it's up for debate whether he's okay, right? What does your family think of your travels on the sailboat around Alaska?
Well, they think that I'm crazy, and I think they've taken out a lot of insurance on me.
Well, and you want to go through the Northwest Passage, which is something that a boat that just arrived in town from France did, and a boat that we saw last year and which departed Sand Point early this spring was, I guess, going back through the Northwest Passage to France also did. What is the Northwest Passage, and you want to go through it, and when do you want to start?
Well, I've been planning this trip for the last 5 years, but it's just taken me a long time to even get this far. The Northwest Passage is, ever since that Europeans discovered the Americas, they've been trying to figure out how to get around the Americas to get to Asia, because that's where they really wanted to go. Mm-hmm. And it'd been a dream for years of finding a way around the northern side of North America. So people have been trying to get through the, quote, Northwest Passage for 500 years. And it really wasn't doable until the last few years with the apparent global warming. People had gone through, but it had taken them several years of waiting for the summer thaw and going a little farther before they got caught in the ice again. But the last couple of years, it's like a highway. I mean, every time I come out here, I hear another bunch of boats have made it through, so I'm starting to get a complex, to tell you the truth.
In 2008 was really the first time we started to see boats coming through the Northwest Passage, or at least that I began to realize that that's from where they were coming. Now, it would take you a long time to go through the Northwest Passage, and your travels around the state of Alaska on the high seas, you know, sometimes involve weeks and weeks alone at sea. You must sleep. And how do you do that as you continue to sail along? Is there an autopilot system in the boat?
Yeah, I've got the boat rigged for single handing. That started years ago because I couldn't get crew. So one day I just got fed up and took the boat out by myself and survived. So since then, I've put a lot of rigging on it. It's got an autopilot when I've got the motor running. It'll steer the boat. And then I've got a wind vane. It's a contraption that hangs off the back of the boat that sails the boat across the wind, so that when you're sailing, you don't need to steer the boat either. And with that, it's just like having crew. So I really don't, once I get out into the ocean and get to sailing, I really don't have to do anything. So mostly I just drink coffee and read books while I'm sailing.
But how does this work? Does the boat actually, can you set a heading into the computer and then the boat will do as best as it can going to that heading?
Well, the autopilot uses a magnetic compass, and you just set the bearing that you want to take, and the boat just motors in that direction. With the wind vane, you set it to the wind direction. You set your sails and on the heading that you want to sail, and then you set up the wind vane, and it keeps the sails full of wind. So if the wind shifts, it'll shift the boat with the wind, so that you're always sailing, but you're not necessarily sailing in a magnetic direction.
So you could be off course dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, if the wind shifts, it just shifts with it. So theoretically, you could just, if the wind shifted directions completely, you'd be sailing in the opposite direction.
So there are really two autopilot systems that you have in place on board the boat.
That's correct.
Now, the first one sounds best. It follows a certain course. What happens if the wind changes and you're fixed on a certain heading?
Well, with the autopilot, if the wind shifts, then the boat won't sail. It'll just round up. So that you have to constantly be adjusting the autopilot. So it steers for you, but you have to be right there constantly making adjustments to keep the sails full. So it's not very practical when you're sailing. And the other thing is it uses electricity, so you can't, if you're sailing it for a couple of weeks, you have to run your motor all the time just to keep your batteries up.
So it sounds like the second autopilot option is really the best. Do the winds tend to change an awful lot in Alaska?
Absolutely. They have a saying in Alaska, the sailboat's really just a motorboat with an emergency propulsion system. In other words, when your engine breaks down, you put up the sails.
You get too much wind or too little wind?
Both. It's either blowing a gale or it's a flat calm, but it hardly ever actually blows steady in any direction that you want to go.
Now, what are some of the challenges that you're going to see going through the Northwest Passage? I guess you're planning to do that next year. Am I correct in that?
I'm going to give it another try next year, yeah.
Well, it's taken some people 2 or 3 years to make their way through the Northwest Passage. Why has it taken so long?
Well, like I said, up until recently, the ice either wouldn't melt at all or it'd only melt for very short periods of time. So people trying to go through, they'd go as far as they could and they'd get stuck in the ice or have to. There's a couple of villages through the Northwest Passage where you can put in for the winter. And then they'd wait for the next summer and the ice would melt some more and they'd make it a little farther. But it was really a tricky business, and a lot of years it didn't melt at all. So the reason that people are going through now is simply because the melting's so dramatic that the entire passage is open for anywhere from a couple of weeks to a month or more, a year.
One thought that I had about the autopilot thing, okay, you're sailing along in the Northwest Passage and you've got the boat on autopilot and you get a few hours of sleep. Meanwhile, a boat comes in front of you, and how do you manage to avoid the other boat that you encounter while you're on autopilot and down below decks catching a few hours of shut-eye?
Well, I mean, big cargo ships have a collision radar. Their radar is hooked in. If they pick up a ship that's on a collision course, alarms will go off. But unfortunately, I don't have that kind of a boat. So what I do is I have a ship's clock that rings the bells, ship's bells, every half hour, and it wakes me up. So every half hour, I get up and do a 360, make sure that there's nobody coming over the horizon. And my boat's only making about 5 knots, and even a big cargo ship's only making about 20 knots. So I can see them coming over the horizon about 20 miles away, which means that if I wake up every half hour, I'll see anything that's within 10 miles of me. So that's how I do it.
Is it likely that you were in, could you go days without seeing someone in the Northwest Passage? Is that a likely scenario?
That's very likely up there, yeah, sure.
What about in the Gulf of Alaska? Is it safe to use autopilot there?
Yeah, I've been doing it for for the last 20 years. The same thing in the fjords and stuff in southeast. The fjords are typically about 10 miles wide. And again, my boat's only going about 5 knots. At night, I slow it down to 3 knots, and then I sleep in the cockpit. And at 3 knots, in a half hour, I'm only going 1.5 miles. And so even if the boat turned completely 90 degrees and headed straight for the shore, it'd still be an hour or two before I hit the shore. So it works. I mean, it's been successful so far.
Well, no, that's you know, history is a good indication of what the future is going to hold in many cases.
Let's hope.
Now, challenges going through the Northwest Passage, you say that it's taken some people a few years to actually make the trip. If you pull into a village along the Northwest Passage, and there are only two or three of these villages up there, what do you do about customs and entering, you know, a foreign country?
Well, obviously, if you're coming out of, you know, Alaska waters into Canada, you're supposed to clear customs. But the eastern part of the Northwest Territory is actually basically their own country now. It was the same way in the Queen Charlotte Islands. The people in the Queen Charlotte basically have sovereignty or autonomy, and they handle their own customs and stuff like that. And they were really great. I didn't have to put up with any kind of I had no problems. They were very easygoing. And I assume it'll be the same way up there. Canada itself could be kind of sticky because they got a lot of laws now about what you can bring in and what you can't. But I haven't had any of that trouble when I'm sailing around the Arctic areas or the, you know, British Columbia.
Speaking about this area in particular in the Shumagins, you've done some sailing. You've sailed over to King Cove. You've been to Fault's Pass. You've been to Dutch Harbor, which is actually in the Aleutian Islands. What are these areas like? Are they good sailing waters, not so good sailing waters compared to other places around Alaska?
Well, the winds, my experiences of the winds are still fluky. It's either flat, calm, or blowing a gale. But the scenery out here, the topography is just incredible. I've never been anywhere in the world that's so striking. The islands and the vegetation on them, and also the vast stretches of you know, wilderness, you know, pristine environment where it hasn't been, you know, there are no freeways, no skyscrapers, no smog. So, and there's, you know, lots of sea life. So I really like it out here. It's just incredible. You could sail around here your whole life and never see it all.
Now, how difficult is it, for example, to sail to King Cove? Are the winds, the prevailing winds, pretty good for that trip?
Well, you know, if it's blowing an easterly, then you're just going to run right down there. But you just have to catch it on the right day.
Are there a lot of shallow spots that you have to be mindful of?
Well, you do. Well, going over to King Cove, you do, because you're going through the inside passage. So it gets pretty narrow. There's a number of places that are pretty tricky. But I ran through there in the dark twice now. Didn't have any trouble.
Wow. Interesting. Would it be something that a more novice sailor could manage to do, sailing to King Cove? Do you have to get out maps and charts and use GPS, or is it something you can do just by eyeballing it?
Well, you definitely need charts. I learned the hard way when I first got to Alaska, like when I ran aground, because I looked at the chart at the dock and thought I'd memorized it, and then promptly went out and ran aground and hit a reef that was clearly marked on the chart, but I didn't have the chart out looking at it. And so anybody that's going to go sailing needs to have adequate charts for navigation.
The waters right around Sand Point are shallow in some places. For example, when you exit the harbor, right, you have to be on the far side if you're going out to the right. Am I correct?
Right, absolutely. I mean, that's when you're in the open ocean, you know, 99% of the time, you've got plenty of depth under you. But anytime you're going along the coast, you never know when there's going to be a reef or something like that. Mm. And that's why you need the charts. Otherwise, it's just to be a crapshoot trying to get in and out of a harbor.
Now, how did you start sailing?
Well, how did I start? I was living on a little island in the Caribbean in my early 20s, and I was trying to get off of the island. I didn't have much money, and so I was trying to get a job on a ship. Mm. And this old the Norwegian fishing boat converted to a sailing yacht, and it came through, and they took me on as a deckhand. Hmm. And so the first week we sailed from Aruba over to the Panama Canal, and it was there the winds are perfect. I mean, we set the sails when we left Aruba, and we sailed for 6 days and never touched the lines.
That's amazing. That is fantastic, in fact.
Yeah, it was so incredible that I spent the rest of my life trying to recapture that week.
Yeah. And sailing around Alaska clearly is not that. It's constantly resetting the sails and playing with that and making course corrections.
Right, absolutely. In the 10 years I sailed around Southeast, I had 2 days where I had 8-hour spinnaker runs in 10 years. So,
That gives you an idea of how complex and how kind of physically demanding sailing in Alaska really is.
Right.
How long would it take you to sail from Sandpoint to King Cove, assuming weather conditions were, basically normal? We're talking about a July or August day.
Sailing, not using the motor.
Yeah, sailing.
That really depends. I had a friend that sailed from, I don't know if people are familiar, down in Southeast, Baranof Warm Springs is about 50 miles from Juneau. And I had a buddy that had a sailboat with no engine in it, and it took him 54 days to sail from Warm Springs to Juneau.
All right, so it could take you an awfully long time to make that voyage.
Right.
Most likely, though, it's 80 miles. You said that on average you do about 5 knots.
Right.
In your ship. So figuring that a knot is about, 1.2 miles per hour? So you do about 10 miles, about
right.
7 miles,
about
8 miles
that.
An hour.
Uh-huh.
You could probably make it in 10 hours, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you had good wind, I could make 125 miles a day if I'm just out sailing and got the wind with me.
Wow.
But that's under ideal conditions. The problem is you don't have trade winds up here. You have storm fronts that just move through constantly, and I'm explaining what everybody here already knows, so forgive me. But so the wind shifts as a storm front goes through, the wind blows from one direction, and then a few hours later, it just starts going clear around the compass. So that's the problem, is that on any given day, the wind will be blowing from several different directions, so you can't rely on it to sail where you want to go. So it's unless you've got unlimited time, you really don't do a lot of sailing around here.
Interesting. I wasn't familiar with that. I mean, others probably are very familiar with that the wind just sort of goes around the compass like you're saying. That could help you if you're just trying to make short-haul trips, because if it blows one way for 4 or 5 hours and then it shifts
right.
and blows a different way, well, that's great. You can come home, maybe, if it switches in the right direction.
Well, the thing to think about is the fact that the diesel engine is a rather recent invention, right? Up until, to the mid part of last century, people actually had to sail. I mean, people would sail into Juneau, which is like 90 miles from the ocean. And I don't know how the heck they made it in through those fjords and sailing ships, but it could take them like weeks to get in there.
Well, for a long time, Sitka, of course, was the capital, so they didn't have to go all the way to Juneau.
Exactly.
It's only a few ships maybe that had kind of the less important routes that would wind their way eventually up to Juneau.
Right. Exactly.
Anchorage is also looks like it could be pretty difficult to access because it's way, way up there.
Well, Anchorage, I moved to Anchorage once and I was real excited because of all that water in Cook Inlet, right? Well, it's not navigable. Cook Inlet is deadly for small boats, especially up around Anchorage. I mean, when you get down around Kenai and stuff, then it's a lot better. But very few people are out in small boats in northern Cook Inlet.
as you're sailing around the state, as you have been for the last 10 or 20 years, do you tend to see the same folks sailing and recognize the boats?
Yeah, I do a lot. It's the sailing community is pretty small in Alaska, so you tend to know most of them.
There probably aren't 100 boats registered, sailboats registered in Alaska.
Oh, no, there's a lot more than that. I mean, there's a lot of people in Anchorage have, you know, like boats in Seward and down in Homer. But probably only a couple of hundred.
Yeah. Well, that's
not many.
It sounds like you've got an interesting trip planned. When do you plan to depart Sand Point?
Well, you know, obviously I'm going to be here for another winter. So I'd like to get out of here as soon as I can. But the thing is, it doesn't do any good to get up there too early because the ice is still blocking the channel. So
you're talking about the Northwest Passage voyage through there. So this is a pretty good staging ground for that trip.
Yeah, to me it is because you're really protected here for the winter. There's not really a good place to leave the boat anywhere else. I mean, Nome's froze up solid in the winter. When I was working up there, there was a sailboat there. But I wouldn't want to leave my boat there unless I had to. So this is very protected, and it's within striking distance. With good weather, I could probably make it to Barrow in a week.
Will you be doing any shakedown runs while you're in town?
I'm hoping to. If I can get the boat back in the water before I have to leave, I want to go out to Nagai Island, and I heard Vitus Bering is buried out there, and I'd really like to go look at his grave. And I also heard that there's a Japanese submarine sunk off Nagai Island, too. I belong to a history organization that studies U-boats. Well, submarines from all, you know, countries, but especially World War II submarines. So I'm really interested in trying to get some more information on that submarine, if anybody knows anything about it.
There was some research done not too long ago. They discovered it about 2 years ago, didn't they?
Oh, really? Okay.
I think if we're talking about the same boat, this is a subject I'm not well versed in. You probably are much more, you know, read and studied on this subject, but it'll be interesting. So you plan to do a few sails before you head.
Yeah,
back
even if I don't get out this fall, next spring I'm probably do a shakedown run out and go see the places that are around here that I'd like to see before I take off. I'd like to go out to Unga and to Nagai and a bunch of other places that people are telling me about. The longer I stay here, the more places I hear about that I want to go see. So it could be another year before I get to...
Yeah, you might just find that you're happy sailing around here in our funny weather and wind patterns.
Well, that's why it's taken me 5 years to get this far. It's because I keep getting distracted.
But next year, you're going to be heading through the Northwest Passage. Will you have a crew when you do that?
No, I just sail by myself.
Yeah. Is there any way to keep track of your boat? Do you have like a GPS translator on your boat that would send up a signal so that we could all follow you?
No, not right now. I keep trying to set up a website, but I'm fairly computer illiterate, so I haven't got that going yet.
All right, well, I've been talking with Dr. Chuck Ellis. His boat is in town, and maybe we'll see you sailing around in the near future, but certainly you'll be back next summer to sail off through the Northwest Passage, or at least that is your plan. Anything else you want to add?
Oh, yeah, not to belabor a point, but if anybody knows anything about the submarine, I'd really appreciate any information to try to pinpoint where it is.
You can call the station if you've got any information at 383-5737, and we'll get a message to Dr. Ellis. Or you can email me at gm@ksdpradio.com. That's gm@ksdpradio.com, and again, we'll forward that message along to Dr. Ellis. Looking for information about the submarine. Do you think you could actually see it from the surface? How deep is it?
Well, I don't know. The guys telling me about it, you know, they were trying to remember, you know, 60, 70 years ago. So they're kind of vague on exactly where it is and how deep it is. So somebody should know, you know, where I can access the information, historical records on it.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. This is Meet the People for a Tuesday morning following Labor Day weekend. Hope you had a great weekend. And now we'll go back to the music for a few minutes before NPR News at the top of the hour. I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest today has been Dr. Chuck Ellis. This is 830 AM KSDP Radio.
All Seasons Honda in Homer has been Bush, Alaska's source for ATVs, outboards, generators, and more for 30 years. Always Anchorage prices. Competitive All Seasons Honda is experienced.